This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I see that you're really in the spirit today, wearing your Star Trek Deep Space Nine sweatshirt.
Absolutely. I got this from a very reputable dealer on the station, and thankfully it is reputable because it's lasted quite a long time. I would know if it hadn't been reputable, if it had been one of those Quark subsidiaries, because, you know, it would not have lasted very long. But I've had this sweatshirt, I think, probably as long as we've been doing the Orb, Chris, and if not, maybe longer. So it's been quite a while, and it is still comfy. And still all intact. So I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, well, I can tell you must have gotten it through Quark or through very stable methods, because it couldn't have come from Martis Mazur's place, because that didn't last very long.
No. I never even went to his establishment. It just wasn't my thing. You know, his games just didn't appeal to me. It's just, you know, there's nothing like a good game of, Tongo or, you know, anything that Quark's got is much better. So
much better. Right. Well, today we are going to explore what Martis has on offer, because we're going to be bringing you a commentary track for the second season episode Rivals. So let's just jump right into that. If you get your episode queued up, however you watch Deep Space Nine, whether it's on DVD, on your computer, through Netflix or CBS All Access, or whatever your method is, get that queued up. And we'll give you a countdown here to hit play in 3, 2, 1, play.
All right. It's good to be back on the station.
When my husband was alive, we ran the business together, and I managed to put away.
Now, this scene is interesting because a couple of reasons. One is that it seems to be based on this sort of flirtation to con each other, but the age difference of the characters is a little bit wider than I would expect in such a situation. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting. And yet, I think that's the thing that, you know, obviously we're not spoiling the episode for anyone, but, you know, that at the end, it's the surprise that she had played him. And so I think it's meant to that he's taking advantage of an older woman and conning her, which I think is great. I think it really does kind of throw you off the scent of the rest of the story in many ways. And so, and for me personally, immediately this episode grabbed me right from the beginning, because this is Prince Humperdinck from The Princess Bride, which was one of my favorite movies even now. So,
right. Yeah. You mentioned that to me recently when we were chatting. So I certainly felt like she's playing him the whole time. And then Odo comes up, carries him away. But you felt it was flipped the other way around in terms of how you perceived it?
I mean, at least that, yeah, that's how I think I caught it originally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that would be a really interesting question to have people contact us about, to see which one, when they were originally watching the episode, who did they think was conning who? Or did you think anybody was conning anybody necessarily yet? You know, so
For me, it's because she's spilling the beans so much and like, oh, I can't believe I'm telling you this. I've never told anyone this. And there's so much detail to it. Just seems very suspicious.
No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, especially being older now, that's definitely how I feel.
Should I be flattered?
Martis Major.
I think when I first saw this, I was much younger. And so I also love that this episode is, you know, referencing Star Trek Generations. He's an Elorian. He's a listener. And we're using that pretty quickly here, which is great. You know, this is what Deep Space Nine has done so well, is take those characters that we've seen in other areas of Star Trek and use them to their advantage. And so this was kind of a great way of showing how, man, every Elorian we really went into, they don't seem to be the greatest of people, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, Guinan is, but...
It's true. It's true.
Of course, Sorin's not.
So maybe it's just Elorian men.
Maybe. It could be. I think of it as, you know, this was the golden age of Elorians on Star Trek, because we had Guinan on The Next Generation, then we had Sorin, now we're getting this reference here. And interestingly, you know, Michael Piller had conceived of this character Martis as being the son of Guinan, and Whoopi was supposed to be in this episode, but as was often the case with Whoopi, because she had such a strong career going at the time, she was not available. But that was interesting to make that connection with the Elorians, because we don't really see, apart from, of course, in Generations, we have a whole ship full of them. We don't see a lot of Elorians as individual characters in Star Trek outside of this time period here of like the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, it does kind of make sense, you know, as we're watching the credits here, as I think why, you know, it would be difficult, I think, to... There's not a lot of stories to really tell with them, you know, in the sense of like they're not an alien race that has anything really specifically interesting about them, if you ask me. So I think Guinan turns out to be an interesting character, but has nothing to do with her being an Elorian. You know, it's just because her as how they write her makes her interesting. Yeah. But as a species, I wouldn't say necessarily Elorians jump off the screen as being the most interesting of Star Trek races, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I would say what's interesting is I would say that Whoopi being, or Guinan being an interesting character does have a lot to do with her being an Elorian, except she established what it means to be an Elorian, right? She's a good listener. She's a counselor. They're very long-lived, so she has a lot of experience and knowledge about things, and that comes along with being an Elorian, but she's the first that we meet. Mm-hmm. So it's the nature of her character that establishes those traits for the Elorians. So in that sense, maybe, yeah, what you said makes sense for the character.
Yeah, I can see that. So
I love this part here, because recently... I told you we were talking the other day that this racquetball scene sticks in my mind from this episode, because back in 94, when I was in Russian classes at Indiana University, I watched this one night after a long day and it stuck with me. But during the pandemic here, I've been doing Racket NX on Oculus Quest VR goggles for exercise. And this scene just reminds me so much of that, even in the design.
Against everybody. Played a Vulcan in the finals. Talk about stamina.
It's funny because I always loved this, and especially because as we move throughout Deep Space Nine, this is really the beginning of the friendship between O'Brien and Bashir. And part of that has to do with them finding this commonality. You know, I think there was no way that Miles would have ever thought that there's anything he could look up to Bashir for, you know, because he just kind of sees him as being an arrogant jerk in many ways. And yet, he kind of has to have this begrudging respect for a guy who can kick his butt at his favorite game, you know? And that kind of works itself out in this episode, which is really fun. And it doesn't hurt that, you know, maybe they end up having a mystery to solve together as well. And that mm-hmm. also brings them together. I think that their natural curiosity. So this whole storyline for them is so much fun, I think.
I love Miles when Julian says that they went to the championship. He's like, against other doctors, right? He doesn't think that Julian could possibly be good at this game.
You know, I thought I hated racquetball in college because, well, it's the one thing I got a C in. Mainly it's because I'm really not very coordinated and I cannot play off the back wall. This looks like racquetball from hell.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I used to play racquetball with my Russian professor in university, actually. This is one of my favorite games.
I think this is, apart from the actual being in prison, this is, your worst nightmare, being in prison, which is the person you're stuck with is a really loud snorer.
Right. So how do you feel about the performance here as Martis? Because, our friend Keith DeCandido, the great Star Trek novelist, he, for years now, he's been doing these reviews on IO9. He did a DS9 rewatch and all. And he was not impressed with Chris Sarandon here. And he said that he utterly fails in the role of Mazur. He's flat, dull, uninteresting, has none of the needed spark with Armin Shimmerman that the role calls for. Nor do we see any evidence of the charm he's supposed to be using on both Alcia and Roanna. Now, are those fighting words for you, Matthew, from Keith?
Yes, well, I'm sorry I had to wait.
It's interesting because, I mean, obviously being a fan of The Princess Bride, in many ways he's playing that character who's really extremely arrogant and uppity and feels like everybody should, be blessed to breathe the same air as he does. And that's how, to me, he comes off. And the fact that he can charm certain women, or just people in general with his ability to listen is really interesting. But I think most of this episode, we actually see him in a place where he's not trying to do that. Like this scene where he's just being a jerk, like he mm-hmm. looks down on people. They're kind of less than he is. And in many ways, he treats most people as if they're less than human. And they deserve no respect from him. And so he treats everybody like Rodney Dangerfield. And I don't know. I feel like, to me, he plays that pretty well. Is he the greatest in the role? I don't think he's the greatest, but I mean, I don't really have any problems with him, and he doesn't detract from the episode in any way for me. So I don't know. How do you feel?
Well, I don't have any deep thoughts about it. I will say that he's not the most engaging actor for me in this role, but he also feels very much like so many of the guest actors who we get on DS9, especially early DS9, The Next Generation. Just feels like normal Star Trek.
Well, yeah. No, I can agree with that. In many ways, I feel like he does kind of feel more like a stage actor that's been brought in to be on Star Trek, and so. But no, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't, I don't know. For me, in so many ways, this episode is called Rivals, but the rivalry I care about is this one, where Miles walks in and he is mad as hell because Bashir just kicked his butt up and down that racquetball court.
Yeah.
And it's just him complaining about captain of the team in medical school.
You had a game?
No, he had a game. I just kind of stumbled around the court for 90 minutes, made a complete
ass. How great.
Myself.
Okay, so we give Keiko, and we have kind of given Keiko a hard time on this show. But in this episode, mm-hmm. I think she is written perfectly. In the way that she allows her husband to vent here, the way that she, when they're going to have their game later, for the tournament, she treats her husband with real respect. She's trying to encourage
him. She's encouraging him.
Yeah. Here she is, I think, a very, what everybody would want as a good partner, we all have those bad days where something goes wrong and we want to come home and complain about it And if we're lucky and blessed, we have a good spouse that we can do that to, and they allow us to complain. So
I just couldn't get them there.
Now, right here, Matthew, is one of these really, really shockingly racy moments of 1990 Star Trek. Miles took his shirt off. Now, how do you feel about this decision?
I mean, I couldn't be more excited about it. So it was one of the most exciting things that has ever happened. So I have to enjoy this scene the most, though. It's one of my favorites in this episode, where you have this great relationship that's been building with Dax and Bashir, and I just love him, like, talking about, like, he was really worried for Chief. But what I love about this whole thing is that what he was worried about is he respects the Chief so much. Like, we realize Bashir has this love for Miles O'Brien in many ways. He likes this guy so much, and all he wants to do is be able to impress him, which it's such classic male friendship where you don't realize each other that you're going to get along and that you're actually really going to like each other until something happens. This is really well written to me in this episode.
But it's also classic Bashir, right? That what I like is the contrast between the scene we just had with Miles mm-hmm. and Keiko and the one we have here in their view of things. You still feel Bashir's somewhat arrogance and sense of air of superiority and his mm-hmm. enthusiasm coming out. And of course, this is before we find out that he's genetically enhanced, but that those characteristics are still there in the way the character is portrayed.
A couple has refused to press charges. You can go.
Well, this is an interesting moment too, because this is where things kind of begin to change. You know, this whole idea of luck beginning to change for him as a character. So, and this is one of those ways in which, you know, I think Deep Space Nine contended with in its second season having to stay on a station and how to create episodes that were interesting. But in a lot of ways, this is a classic Deep Space Nine in the sense that we're going to use this as ability. We have this A story with this character, but the B story is actually the most important, where we're going to have movement in the relationship between Bashir and O'Brien because of it.
A man wearing a better suit than your own. Either you're a con artist or you're covering up an empty coin purse.
So, of course, you need a con artist to identify a con artist.
Yep.
And Quark is onto him.
Oh, yeah. And as he should be.
What's interesting here, though, is so Martis comes to the station. He is a con artist. And yet this device he's holding here, which he gets from the snoring alien Koss, who we saw him in the holding cell with, is really the key to this story.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a really interesting thing because what I don't understand about it is, and this is maybe something about the episode that does not work for me, is I don't get what makes this thing fascinating. Like, why would you care? Whether,
it's purple, Matthew.
I mean, that's true, but it's no Mace Windu lightsaber.
Flashy lights
I mean,
on it.
So,
true.
You know, I think that's the thing that I'm kind of wondering as to why you would be so drawn to it, unless in the explanation we get later, is there something about those neutrinos spinning that keeps you connected with them? Like, you have to keep playing this. It keeps you drawn in. I don't know. That's something that obviously we never explain in the episode. It's not necessarily important, but it does make me wonder as to why the heck does anybody care about this thing?
Well, it's certainly not as fascinating as the device in the game on the Next Generation.
This is true. It is no game. So
I suspect that, there's something about the way that this device somehow brings you luck, I guess, is sort of the implication here, mm-hmm. that maybe it interacts with you in some way that, like you're saying, creates a connection where like you feel some fascination for it. Maybe you don't know why.
Yeah. You know, this is an interesting moment too, is that, you know, as Quark is kind of trying to buy it from him. And, you know, it's interesting because we see Quark not really do his job very well. And this is of being his own con man. Like, you know, he goes one step too far by refilling the beverage on the house, you know, and that's what tips him off to like realize, no, he really wants this, you know. So it's interesting, right. As good as Quark is, he slips up here actually pretty badly.
Well, Quark is, when I say this, on the station anyway, the everyday people he interacts with, Quark is not as accustomed to dealing with another con artist. So maybe those little moves he thinks will work, but for someone else who's used to conning people, it's a giveaway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Times are difficult.
Oh,
okay, so here we have Rowanna, who's this Bajoran shopkeeper who's decided to close up shop.
Before that, we had a shop on Bajor for 17. But a few months ago, he passed away. And
I mean, I would say, I feel like in this scene, he does a pretty good job, I think, of, you know, being what he's meant to be here, you know, as somebody who cons people by being able to listen to them and give them a sense that their story is important.
Right. And that's the Elorian trait that right. benefits him as a con artist, yeah. right?
You understand.
But interestingly, because you don't know who's conning whom in this story, her whole story about her husband dying, it makes you think, is this also something? Is she going to con him, at least for a moment?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I honestly hadn't even thought of that, but you're absolutely right. So
I love that there when Bashir swings, tries to hit it, misses, is so obvious to yep. anybody watching that he's throwing the match. He's trying to make Miles feel better.
Well, it is what's funny about it is that whole idea of like, you know, the last time they played, right? O'Brien almost killed himself trying to play the game and could have really hurt himself. You know, he is older mm-hmm. and not as in shape as Bashir is. And I do kind of love that Bashir is trying to save him from feeling bad about himself in some way. And there is an arrogance to that, but there's also a care in that too, I think. Like,
right.
he really cares yeah. about this guy, and he wants him to feel good about himself as a man. And it's interesting how you can, from both sides, you can see it in a way where one feels just like an arrogant jerk move, but at the same time, it's not. And when you see it from Bashir's perspective, it's not that he does not mean it that way. And I think that's one of the things this episode is really nice in, is that it kind of gives you the opportunity to see things from Bashir's perspective that puts it in a better light.
It's my better judgment.
I didn't beg, I blackmailed you. And don't pretend it hasn't paid off for you either.
I like that. I also like, too, that Quark can't get his way here by being like, oh no, I was the one who had, you know, the contract first, and then he gets his brother stolen.
Right. And Rom looks so happy about the opportunity.
Make me a better offer. A bidding war over you?
So here's a question for you. Armin Shimmerman, talking about this episode, has said before that he felt there should have been more one-upmanship moments between Quark and Mardis, because the title rivals can refer to Bashir and Miles and the racquetball game. It also clearly refers to Quark and Mardis. How do you feel about how like their little battle of the promenade plays out?
I would say that, you know, when I do get to the end of this episode, I do find both storylines to be a little bit lacking, honestly. Because we never actually finish the match between Bashir and O'Brien, you know, that they're playing for charity, which mm-hmm. is a little strange. And so I think in many ways, both stories need just a slight bit of refinement to make them feel a little bit more fulfilling in the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I think this episode is really good at is that, you know, it deals very well with the theme, especially but in this storyline between Martis and Quark, which is it. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. And that's exactly the lesson that we learn here, you know, and you know, any get rich quick scheme probably isn't going to work either. So
not with this batch, but with my brother around, you could have it be.
I really like this girl's hair. With like all the spikes sticking up on top. I feel like there's so many uses for that kind of hairstyle.
Yeah. You know, ramming doors when you can't get in, or
you could carry items.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe hang your jacket off the top, you know, when you can't find a coat.
What it does remind me of is, you know, how much recognition Deep Space Nine got in its day for its costume, for its makeup design in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And the variety of aliens that we see on the station as well.
Yeah, it is true. It also begs repeating that Deep Space Nine needs to be in HD. So,
yes, definitely. I mean, I rewatched the documentary a couple of weeks ago, and watching
looks
that
so
HD
good.
Footage, it just really, really highlights mm-hmm. how badly the show needs to be remastered so that the creative work can shine.
Well, and can we just be honest with fans? They just remastered in HD Babylon 5.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, guys, Babylon 5 is kicking our butt here. So we need to change this. And in all honesty, Star Trek, if you want these shows to continue to last on streaming and have people actually watch them, they need to be in a format that's at least 1080. So,
oh, at least, yeah. And I do have some optimism that it may eventually happen now that the streaming service is becoming more key to the business model for CBS and Paramount.
It's true.
And
well, and maybe now that they've combined between, you know,
right.
Paramount
yeah,
and,
that
and
could
CBS.
Help.
So.
And just in general, they're investing so much in the property now, in Star Trek as a property. I think there's a better chance of it happening now than there was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I hope so. So I think it's
4 miles. He looks like his body's just aching so much.
It does. What's funny is that this is what's so great about Colmeany is that as he's walking, he is accentuating so many times in my own life where, you know, I've been playing basketball or playing soccer or football or something with friends for too long. And then you can barely walk into the house and barely
right.
sit down. Like he does it so well because it's not over the top. Like he
right.
just the slight movements he adds, you totally buy this dude is like kind of dying inside.
Right. And sometimes while you're playing, you don't notice. And then when you finish.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Then you stop and it's, yeah. So
it's like a few weeks ago, my son, he was limping around the house and struggling to go up the staircase. And I knew he had been with his friends the day before. And I asked what's going on. He said, we did like a marathon yesterday and then we did basketball and we did tennis and they spent the whole day doing these activities and he was fine. And then the next day, like,
oh yeah,
really set in.
Yep. You know, it's also interesting too that I like about this episode is, you know, we do have this whole thing about, you know, the hot new thing, and like in business, you have to be able to ride that wave of mm-hmm. somebody else being the hot new thing. And the whole point then it needs to be is that you continue to do your business well so that people continue to come. And once that dies down, you'll be back. Right. And so there's a part of that here, but it's also too, you know, and we, people being younger coming in to replace you, you know, and is age better than experience? And so those questions here, all of those get asked in here. Not all of them get played out as well as they could be, I think, but it is interesting that they're kind of throwing out all of these themes in this episode.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
Well, and this is the thing, like, what does Quark do here? He finds a way to draw people back in because he knows the station. He knows, you know, he knows the people around him, and he knows better how to kind of use them, right, to get what he wants. But this isn't necessarily in a bad way either, right?
So, right.
Spills, victory, and defeat. Look no further. We've got it all. And here he is, the reigning champion of Starfleet, a legend on both sides of the wormhole.
Bashir's face is like, what?
Miles the Mechanic O'Brien.
Miles the Mechanic O'Brien.
You know, it's actually not a bad name if you were going to be, like, in the boxing ring. The Mechanic.
Right, yeah.
But I don't see any emergency. And the challenge. He's fast. He's deadly.
And I just have to say, the way that this whole thing is about, like, con people.
Mm-hmm.
The way that O'Brien and Bashir get conned into this by Quark is masterful. Like, here's a masterclass in conning.
Yeah.
I donate half the house's winnings to the Bajoran Fund for Orphans. Orphans!
And they do tie this in again to the whole basis of the show and the Bajoran occupation. You've got the Bajoran War Orphans Fund. So they always do a really good job of leveraging the framework of the story or the framework of the show.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's a good point. You know, they never forget where they are in the galaxy, and that is the thing I think that allows them to kind of create the basis we get for this entire show as a whole, you know, is the fact that we're not gallivanting around, is the fact that we're having to stay and explore what it means to live in this area with these people day in and day out, which is actually much harder anyway. The Next Generation is more like the grandparents, you know, they come and play with you for a while and then they leave, right? You know, DS9 is like the actual parents where there is no leaving.
That's a good point. Never really quite thought of it that way, but it's true, right? Yeah, but having this like smaller environment and tighter narrative is a key to making the mythos feel more real.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's like the computer brought that program up at random. And then
this is where things get interesting to me. It becomes like, it's like the heart of gold. They discover the infinite improbability drive is at work on the station.
Yes. You know,
something, it's not impossible. It's just highly improbable.
This is where they should have just asked the computer what the question of life, the universe, and everything is, and then it probably would have solved the problem.
Just coincidence, that's all.
Or they weren't carrying a towel. That's really what it was.
That's what it was, yeah. Miles and Jules, they went to the racquetball court without their towel.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things, you know, when a lot of Star Trek episodes obviously come down to some crazy techno babble, but one of the things I thought was really interesting about this is that all of this techno babble isn't necessarily something that couldn't happen. You know, like this idea of like, well, what would happen? It's just improbable. It's not impossible. And so I think, you know, they explain it in a way that makes you see how this isn't as crazy as you'd think. And it makes it kind of fun, I think, you know, when it's not just some science that's never going to exist, you know, so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there's some scientific inaccuracy in this episode.
I'm sure there is.
Concerning, you know, the spins of neutrinos and your ability to measure those and such. But also remember, the story was written in the early 90s, and our understanding of quantum mechanics is a bit deeper now than it was then also. So It's the idea that even if it's not entirely accurate, the speculation is very well grounded in what could be possible based on what we know about nature.
See, this is where I would say I think he gets this really right in his portrayal, is that the problem is that he doesn't actually care about any of these people, and so he only can put on the air of caring for so long, and then after that is done, it's like, well, you know, this is a guy who is only about himself, only for himself. His gift only can get him so far, and if he actually really cared, he would probably get a lot farther. And in many ways, this is kind of what makes Quark better person, right? Because Quark doesn't just care about himself. He wants everybody to think he does, but he doesn't. And so that's the thing that sets them apart, and I think it makes it really interesting.
Keep the ball low to his left.
Him talking to himself in the mirror here without his shirt on is hysterical.
And kill shot left.
And again, as I said earlier, I just love how supportive Keiko is in this moment. Like, she just, it's one of those things where you realize your spouse just needs to go through something, and you just let him go through it, you know, and you support him how you can, and she does a fantastic job of that here.
Miles, wait.
And then she karate kids him up.
A silk handkerchief. Medieval Japanese design.
Of course, not from Okinawa, so from Japan.
Right. Okay, now, go kick Bashir's butt.
It's great. This moment with the juice from the monks, I find pretty funny.
You know, this would have probably worked on anyone else, but Bashir being a doctor, of course he's, well, and knowing Quark as he does, of course he's suspicious about, what are you up to here?
Well, I think that's the thing that I really like here too, is that the writers do understand the character of Bashir is that he is somebody who is too curious. And it's not somebody who's just going to put anything in his body. Look, I mean, he's a guy who's working out in his office before he goes to play a game. You know, I mean, he's somebody who really does take care of himself. There's no way he's going to drink something he doesn't know what it is.
Right.
Especially, like you said, from Quark.
From Quark. Especially in a bottle with no label.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about your exercises?
This won't take a second.
Oh, why bother? Don't you trust the monks?
Water.
What I also find hilarious is, in this whole scene, he's going to be working now to get Bashir to throw the match, which, to me, is pretty hysterical as well. And he's going to try and con him into it as to why he should. Because, well, it's for the orphans.
No one's betting on Chief O'Brien. All the money's on you. If you win, there won't be any profits. And if there aren't any profits...
This is appealing to him that no one thinks that Miles can beat you.
I mean, it makes sense as to why people might think that, you know. So. Well,
and also appealing to Bashir as a doctor that if you don't throw the match, the children won't have blankets and they'll be cold. You know, that's a good argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love his answer. He's like, the blankets are going to be provided one way or the other. And if you don't provide them like you should, regardless of who wins, then... you will have us to deal with at the end. So I do like that Bashir can't be played here. It's actually kind of great.
Yeah.
Kira said you found something.
Oh, I found something, all right. I just don't know what it means. Look at this.
solar neutrinos.
Notice anything?
You know, the one thing
that... what's interesting about this is that at this stage in DS9, around the middle of the second season, we still get more of this kind of classic Star Trek story structure of there's some kind of like technical or science mystery thing going on in the background, which we don't get as much later in DS9 when it like fully shifts more to the character stories and those types of interactions.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I also, it's a little funny to me that, even then, the graphics on the computers, it's not great. So
if they update the show in HD, if they remaster, would you want them to update graphics on any of the screens or keep it exactly as it was before?
I mean, if they wanted to, I wouldn't have a problem with it, mainly just because it makes the show better, I think. You know, if there's something more visually interesting to look at on screen, it's the same way that they upgraded some of those things in TOS, and I know some people were really upset about that, but, you know, it did make for a more interesting show, personally, I thought, because you enjoy looking at the screen when they're showing you something, you know, so, and when we were looking at that screen, it was really important. It was a story point.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, that's important.
You know, like in this scene right here with the purple orbs on the table, I sometimes get the feeling that there are some other people betting on the Miles and Jules match. And those would be the gamesters of Triskelion who are apparently here wondering who's going to win.
I'm cutting the transmission.
What? You can't.
Watch me.
I think this is a great moment, though, because this is that moment where I think the real seed of friendship gets planted, where these two guys, they have a mystery, and they realize, and they respect each other enough to be like, I'm having the game of my life that I should never be having, and I'm having the worst game of my life that I can't believe I'm having. So it takes a lot of intellectual honesty to be able to have this conversation.
I can't miss. I can't hit the broadside of a Plygorian mammoth.
And apparently a Plygorian mammoth is huge, so...
Apparently, yeah.
Which should have come straight back to me. You try.
But it also shows that they're both in their own way. Miles is more on the engineering side. Jules is the medical. But they're both very curious, and they're both really... they analyze everything and they wonder, like, why do things work the way they do? So they really notice that something is not right here.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And it's a part of what makes them, you know, really interesting characters. And I think makes it really fascinating for them to then, you know, be friends as they move throughout the series. And what's great is that, you know, for so many of us, the difference is what makes us better friends, because somebody sees something in a way that we don't. And that shouldn't be a detriment. That's actually a blessing.
Right.
And isn't that true, Idik?
Yes.
Changing them so incredibly unlikely things can happen on a regular basis.
Well, how can we find out what's causing it?
See, now we're totally into The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
98% of the neutrinos in this room are rotating clockwise.
So what I think is funny is that they just blow them up here.
I know.
I mean, I don't know if that's maybe the best idea, is just to destroy them like that.
I feel like the line should be when Sisko says, I'd love to charge you with something, but I just destroyed all the evidence. Yeah. Should be the line.
When you lose...
But these machines are affecting everyone on the station, whether they're playing them or not.
This sort of reminds me of the ending of Q-less as well, when they finally track down where the strange emissions are coming from, and so they can get rid of the thing. And rolling back to what we were saying about Bashir and O'Brien there. based on how they start to unravel things here, then I always, in my mind, I jump ahead to the end of the series in Extreme Measures when they have to work together to find out what's going on with Sloane. They become
it's a good point.
Detective duo, right?
Internal power source.
Lieutenant.
Wait.
I think it is a great moment here, too, that they do decide to destroy them because of the impact that these things are having on people's lives in really bad ways. You know, like, they're having detrimental effects on people in all sorts of ways. You know, we've seen a lot of silly things, but you can imagine how this could really go badly for a lot of people.
Well, they do mention earlier in the story that multiple people having minor accidents at the same time, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, see, this is the moment, I think, you know, I've it's hard to remember watching the show originally, but it's like, he was being played too. So,
what's the meaning of this?
Ask him. Your lay friend here just tried to scam me.
But I love this too, because Quark is the one who doesn't fall for it. So, and that's one of the things I think he plays really well in this show, is that he's so arrogant, he thinks nobody could con him. I think that's
right.
It's not bad.
And you're talking about Martis there.
Yeah, Martis, yes.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Oh, taken in by one of your own.
Quark is just a much more skilled and experienced con man than Martis is. I think maybe this is where Armin feels a bit like there should have been more one-upsmanship throughout the episode, because this would have been a better payoff at the end if they had had more back and forth with each other.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the story, it would have been nice if they had found a way to do that, not only with, this storyline, but I just feel like there's a missing scene with the storyline with Bashir and O'Brien as well, which is a little disappointing that we don't, you know, kind of see any resolution to what did happen with the game that they were playing.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting if they told some of these stories today, where in streaming they have this flexibility to make episodes the length they need to be. So this episode, for example, instead of 45 minutes, 33 seconds, maybe it's 57 minutes and 12 seconds, and they have room for a couple more scenes that make it all play out. Yeah,
I think you're right.
That could be interesting to see.
That's a really good point.
It's sort of like if every science fiction novel that's written has to be 207 pages.
Mm-hmm.
That's how these episodes, because they're like clockwork because of the commercials that have to go in and such. They all come in with just within a few seconds of each other, and really storytelling benefits from having a bit more room to breathe, and sometimes less, you know. Sometimes stories don't need to be 45 minutes. Maybe they're only 35 minutes, and you've told the whole story.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that is one of the things that helps. And it, I mean, I, you know, I remember when we were talking about the first season of Picard, the beginning of the season, we were kind of frustrated that some of the episodes felt disjointed in that sense. You know, like, they still don't always get that right, even when they have that flexibility. So it is fascinating that can still be the case, you know, even now. So
true. All right. Well, the end credits have rolled. I hope everyone enjoyed the commentary for the episode. Matthew, it was really fun to finally watch an episode together again. You know, we chat about episodes, but it's been quite a while since we sat down like this and just really talked through one.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I absolutely love getting to sit down and watch Deep Space Nine, and especially with you. It is just a joy, and it's a show I still love. You know, I legitimately the other day just turned on a few episodes in season two, because that's actually what spurred us deciding to talk about this, because I was like, you know, I just watched Rivals. That might be a fun one to talk about. And so, you know, it's the show is, even when it's not the best episode, I still find myself enjoying it, except for when it's Profit and Lace. So.
except for that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you would like to share your thoughts on this episode, we brought up a number of points today where I think you might have your own views that you'd be interested in sharing. There are many ways to do that. You can go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field and it should come up. If not, just type the Babel Conference. If you're not yet a member, it is a closed group, so I need you to answer two questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. But that's a great place to talk to us and fellow listeners. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact, and use the form there. And that will come to Matthew and me by email. And you can also find us on Twitter, where our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not, you know, working on your racquetball game, so maybe you can beat Bashir's butt, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, there is no hope for me in that. As I mentioned, I got a C in racquetball and in college, so I will not be doing that. But you can find me on social media under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show talking about all of the fandoms we love. And of course, in that feed as well, you can find Snyder Cuts, where John Mills and I are talking through every single directorial work of Zack Snyder as we're looking towards his Justice League. So really excited about that. Hope you'll check out both of those. And I also do Literary Treks, which is about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And of course, you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network doing two shows. One is called Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. And then I am doing Outpost with Drea Kaufman as we are actually wrapping up the Harry Potter series where we've been going one chapter at a time. So, Chris, if anybody wants to catch up with you, though, and see what Deep Space Nine episodes you're watching, where can they find you?
Well, the best place to do that is definitely Twitter, because that's where I'm most active. My username there is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can also find me in the Babel Conference and other places here and there. My username is C. Brian Jones everywhere. And here on the network, I am getting back into doing a bit more podcasting now. Just recorded a patrons roundtable yesterday. And of course, Matthew and I recorded a Literary Treks. Larry Nemechek and I were chatting yesterday about doing our Ready Room, recapping season 3 of Discovery, and I'll have some episodes of The Edge and other things coming up. So starting to get busy again with podcasting now that my work transition has happened. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek. So yeah, just especially Twitter, that's the best place to chat. And I usually tweet out thoughts about the episodes as I'm watching. Now, I mentioned Patrons Roundtable there. If you'd like to take part in that, it's a great way to join me and chat about Star Trek. We just pick a topic and we talk. We haven't done them in a while, but now we're starting them back up. We're going to do 2 per month to get everyone involved, and it'll be different days of the week. Some flexibility there so more people can participate. And if you want to be part of that, you need to support us through Patreon. And we really do need the help right now to get the health of the network back up to where it needs to be financially. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out how to support us. And we do have a level there that lets you join these roundtables, and we publish those so that everyone can listen to them. So it's a great way to get on mic and kind of take part in a podcast with us. So I hope you'll support us over there. Well, Matthew, that was great fun. I'm looking forward to the next orb. We're going to try to do these regularly now. And it's just really exciting to be back into DS9 and especially talking about it with you.
Chris, it really is. And we do want to thank everybody for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.